Sheffield Live. Made in Sheffield, made by you.
Wake up to something different on Sunday mornings by joining me, Pete Evans, for Spinning Jazz. The finest in modern jazz, from hard bop to bossa nova, from Latin to soul. That's Spinning Jazz every Sunday morning at 9 on Sheffield Live. 93.2 FM.
If you like rock in all its forms, you will love Glory Days. You can listen to us locally on 93.2 FM and on the telly, and anywhere in the world on sheffieldlive.org. What do you think, Don? You know what? I think he likes it. That's Glory Days, every Monday 1 till 3 here on Sheffield Live. Bosh, bosh. Oops, I've had an accident.
Hello, I'm Harry Wilburn. I present Steel & Wire every Wednesday, 10 a.m. Americana, bluegrass, American roots, and more. Lots of guests, lots of local music and musicians. That's Steel & Wire, Wednesday, 10 a.m.
You are listening to fabulous Harry Wilburn on Steel & Wire.
It's time to open the music box. Join me, Steve Roden, every Thursday morning between 10 and 12 for music from the 40s to the 90s from my own music collection. Songs I've grown up with, ones I am sure you will enjoy hearing again. Hope to see you then.
If you love new music and you want to discover the best new artists out there, then tune into The Backroom with me, Paddy. I'll be playing the best in new indie, electro, EDM and punk, and showcasing new Sheffield talent. Also music news, local and national gig guide and new album releases. So tune into The Backroom every Thursday night between 6 and 7 p.m. here on Sheffield Live, 93.2 FM.
This is Sheffield Live. This is Denise.
This is Martin.
And you're listening to The Film Show on Sheffield Live.
Good afternoon, just. This is The Film Show on Sheffield Live, 93.2 FM on digital, and you can listen to us on playback via the Sheffield Live website. Well, hello, Denise.
Hello, Martin. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. It's been a bit of a scrape around the bottom of the barrel week,
has it, for some of this stuff? It's been a hectic week, though. But
somehow we've managed to cobble a show together.
I've had a hectic week, and so have you.
Well, you've been running the snooker, haven't you?
Oh, yeah, that's me, running it.
Duty manager at the Crucible.
It's been very busy. And all this, like, having a job and, you know, earning money, it's great and everything, but it does interfere with your film career.
Yeah.
So I still haven't seen The Fall Guy, which I'm desperate to see.
No, I haven't seen it yet. I've missed it.
Tomorrow.
Right, so we've got a few items to open the show with. So reach for the bell.
Oh.
I just let that linger for a bit. Okay, now you may be wondering why we're raising this, but this week saw the death of the, certainly I think he's a great writer, the American author Paul Auster. Now, before you start saying this isn't the bloody book programme, Auster has
a
lot of connections with film. And he's been writing novels and memoirs and poetry since the mid-1980s. And he has a very curious style. His novels are very stylistically unique in the way he writes it. And much of what happens in the novels is autobiographical. And a lot of it all revolves around chance and coincidence throughout his work. So I think he's a fascinating writer. But on many occasions, he's also moved into the world of cinema. He has written the scripts for a number of films, some of which have been based on his books. He's directed a number of films. His most famous two films, which he was involved in, was Smoke and Blue in the Face.
I must admit, Smoke is the one that... really the only thing I know.
Yeah.
And we commented earlier, you're doing the highbrow and I'm doing the lowbrow this week.
It would seem to be this week. Yeah. For a change, I should say. For a change. But then you haven't seen my music selection.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, okay.
So Smoke and Blue in the Face were made during the 1990s, a collaboration between Auster and the director Wayne Wang. And they're almost like two companion pieces set inside a cigar shop in Brooklyn run by Harvey Keitel. And it's just customers coming in and out of the shop.
Yeah, but there is like a narrative.
It's there somewhere, yeah. But it's both of them are very, very loose and very much about the area and the neighbourhood. I mean, Harvey Keitel goes outside the cigar shop every morning and takes a photograph from the same spot.
What was Paul Auster's background then? Was he Brooklyn?
He's Brooklyn born, yes, and he lived in France for a while in his 20s and had aspired to become a writer for many, many years. And his breakthrough book was the New York Trilogy, which was three short novels put together with, again, some very sort of loose threads.
Yeah.
And that actually caused something of a publishing sensation back in the mid-1980s. I won't necessarily say that his books are difficult, but you have to sort of get into the groove of his work, let's say.
Mm.
If you want to dip your toes in the water of Auster's work, I'd recommend the novel The Music of Chance, which, in my opinion, was made into the best film adaptation of Auster's work. And the film starred, it had a great cast, James Spader, Randy Patinkin, Charles Durning, Joel Grey.
Oh, that's quite and a high pedigree.
Emmett Walsh. And it's a fascinating little story. And Auster actually appears in the very last shot of the film in a surprise ending, and I'll say no more.
Okay.
But it's one of these films. It's such a strange scenario, but it's utterly gripping. So it's not an easy film to get your hands on, but I'm sure it might be out there on YouTube in a booglerized version. I'm not going to go out and buy any of his books this week just because he's passed away. I've already got most of them, but I'm not doing any of that hearse chasing when it comes to anyone passes away.
You can lend me a book then.
But he's someone I shall bring you one in next week.
Yeah.
But I would definitely say he's someone worth catching and seeking out a number of his films, because he's a fascinating writer and he's made some very, very interesting pieces of cinema. That's me there.
Ah.
You got anything?
I don't know. Have I?
She scrolls frantically through her phone.
I honestly, it's been...
Do you want me to do this thing about Meryl then?
Oh, yeah. Let's talk about Meryl.
Come on, let's talk about Meryl. Go on.
Oh, so, and it's back to Cam.
Back to Cannes.
We're in the run up to Cannes, and we're all canning it. But what's she been nominated for now?
It's an honorary Palme d'Or for
her and George Lucas.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. Okay. I think this is for Meryl's contribution to acting,
the world of acting. Yes.
And as I've said, she did actually win the Palme d'Or for best actress, as it was then. I'm not sure how. I think they might still call it that in Cannes, actually.
Yeah, yeah.
Actor and actress. But it certainly was back then. For
The Dingoes Have Got My Baby.
The Baby's Et Me Dingo.
No, it's The Dingoes Have Got My Baby.
No, but then The Baby Et Me Dingo.
Oh, that was really... Do you know, that was like... I remember that being a massive cultural phenomenon.
It was. Everybody was saying The Dingoes Et My Baby. Yeah, and
which is a really, really tragic, horrible thing.
Because you think,
happened.
Of all the roles that she's played, the one she gets the mickey taken out of her the most is... The Baby at My Dingo.
Yeah,
and that's the one she got palmed.
Yes,
that's
well,
the one she won best actor award at Cannes. So life is a cruel phenomenon at times, isn't it?
That's showbiz.
It is. And as we heard last week from Carol Burnett, there's no business like show business.
You see, I knew he loved a show tune. You'll be thinking it's still in there.
I've managed to have a memory wipe since last week.
So she's getting honoured at Cannes.
Apparently.
Excellent. She needs more awards, doesn't she?
Well, she ain't got much on that mantelpiece, has she? Meryl Streep. <yeah. laughs> And the winner is...
But they do seem to be celebrating a lot of American, like, writers, directors, actors.
I mean, what they're doing with George Lucas, I've no idea. At all. But what can you say?
Let's not make this another week that we...
No, there's not be sort of just ranting about people and people are switching off in their thousands.
I'm excited about... We've got a trailer trash spot. I'm excited about the fourth season of The Boys. The trailer landed, I think, today. Or yesterday, maybe. Season 4 of The Boys. Now, we were talking about this earlier, and I don't think you've
I've not yet sampled The Boys.
It's kind of... it's superhero, but it's not superhero. They're known as soups in it, for sure, which makes me think of soup. They are... So it's like a satirical take. It's adult, very adult. It's based on a comic book series.
Mm. The trailer has got a lot of bad language in it, isn't it?
Bad language and a lot of blood.
A lot of blood.
And people explode routinely. In fact, it's got one of the sort of most shocking openings for a series like this, which is not spoiling anything to say because it's in all the trailers, but anyway. So you've got a chap, Huey, who is a character who loves superheroes, thinks they're great. His mind is changed when I think he might be proposing to his girlfriend at the time, but they're on the street and basically she gets obliterated by the A-Train, who is a superhero on his way to be a superhero. And it turns out that he then falls in with a band of vigilantes called The Boys, who are led by a chap who is...
A chap who is
English. Yes. He's a New Zealand actor. Inexplicably, he speaks... it's one of those things where I think he's gone with the accent when he started it, and he's stuck with it. And he talks in like a white governor geezer. I don't know what the accent
Kiwi-esque.
Is.
Kiwi-esque.
But he is a New Zealander, but he's sort of playing a London chap. But it's Carl Urban who plays this Billy Butcher, who is a vigilante who wants to lead. And he's got his own... It turns out he's got his
Nicole
own
Kidman
reason.
Is Squeeze?
No, that's a country singer. Somebody
was
else.
It? I thought she was with Carl Urban for a while.
Similar name, I think. Not
Urban
the same
Carl.
Person. Well, I'll look it up in a minute.
If you would.
Anthony Starr plays this Homelander, who is the main superhero. And it turns out that they are kind of... There's more depth to it, and there's... So he's got an incentive, Huey, to bring the soups down and expose them for what they really are. And then you've got a young Erin who plays Annie. She has superpowers and she is joining the superheroes and she is a superhero fan and then finds out what that real world is like. And obviously there's power at play, there's PR at play, and it's all about money and power and control. And actually the superheroes are in it for their own gain.
Mm-hmm.
So it's all a bit more complex, and this fourth series has just landed, and I think it's out in Prime next month. Okay. And I'm looking forward to it. It's just gory. It's throwaway television. I can't really... It's not the stuff you treasure, but it's very enjoyable, disposable, fun.
Keep it on the back burner and you've got something to fall back on when all else fails.
Yeah.
Music.
This is totally you, this
The
week.
Revenge of the Playlist. Over the since we came back on air, and whenever I'm walking through Sheffield, I have people come up to me and I say, Martin. And they say, we really, really enjoy the music that you play on this show, but when are you going to play William Shatner again? And this is almost constant. And they also say, please stop playing show tunes as well.
They do not. How dare you?
And so I said, well, you know, we don't want to just keep on doing the same old thing, revisiting our old glories. But I was very pleased to see that during the interregnum, during which we were off air for 4 years, William Shatner has made another album.
Oh, he is good, isn't he?
Yes. William Shatner.
Fancy him thinking of us all during those dark times.
Well, like everyone.
What does the world need now?
He was sitting at home,
but
he had
William
nothing
Shatner,
to do.
Love.
All right, he went into space. Not all of us could do that. Well, sort of went
into
space,
didn't he?
Yeah. But what Bill did was record an album of blues tunes. I'm just giving it a moment there for that to sink in with you. And we're going to play a selection of these tunes, item here that I've named Bill Sings the Blues for this week. So what we're going to do, we're going to kick off with him giving a good kicking to Smokestack Lightning.
Smokestack lightning, shining just like gold. Oh, why don't you hear me cry? Go for a ride. Why don't you hear me cry?
we're just going to interrupt the show for a few minutes while Denise composes herself after that. But you are listening to the film show on Sheffield Live, 93.2 FM and on digital. Well, Denise.
I'm just going to wipe the tears from my eyes.
Well, I found it very emotional listening to that as well.
I was meant to do that bit. I can actually speak.
There's three more to go.
Oh, crikey.
I love him. I mean, but he captures it so well, doesn't he? You know, Howling Wolf, who you'd say now, wouldn't you?
Howling Wolf.
And, you know, he's just got that, it just captures the entire essence of the blues, I think.
Oh, dear.
And obviously that will be proven over the three other tracks that we will be playing today. Are you ready to continue with the show?
Yeah. Yes. Go on, what have we got?
You don't seem bothered anymore.
Is it why your William Shatner song's too long? No, it's not. It's not. It's how long should a film be?
There was something, there was an article, there was a poll this week, wasn't there?
But I'll just put a caveat in before we even go on.
Please go.
2,000 people. Who are they?
Exactly.
Yeah. Carry on. Sorry.
I'm very, very dubious with any sort of poll anyway. Have you ever been questioned by a pollster to ask your opinion?
No.
Me neither.
No.
But anyway, 2,000 people have been polled and the highest number have said that the ideal length of a film is 92 minutes.
92?
Yeah.
Does that...
Exactly. Now, obviously, you want to... Like, you would say that this is something that really can't be measured as such. You know, it's... You can make some generalities, I think, about it. And I would say that I think a lot of films made nowadays are too long. And I'm talking about maybe 10, sometimes 15 minutes too long. Mm. I mean, I don't know how a Will Ferrell comedy can last for 2 hours. You know, that's just, I like a bit of Will Ferrell, but I think an hour and a half is enough.
That seems like binging three episodes.
Yeah, yeah. But they're giving you four.
Yeah.
And I just think that's... And you can say that, you know, like thrillers where you know what the end is and it's still... There's got to be this final combat sequence, action sequence.
When you get to the point where you feel like it's self-indulgence on behalf of the director and someone should have been going, OK, we got it. We don't need that beautiful shot that you think's beautiful. It's...
Yes.
Let's go home.
Yeah.
People have got buses to catch.
And I was watching... I was watching The Cincinnati Kid the other week and, you know, like the big climatic card game between Steve McQueen and Edward G. Robinson, it lasts a couple of minutes and Edward G. Robinson just puts down the card, say, hey, I won the hand, Steve McQueen walks out, Tuesday World is waiting for him, the end. And it had, you know, it had a great impact. It worked well. Now, you can imagine what that'd be like if they were doing a remake of that now. That they were trying to like drag out whatever tension they think there could be in that to like ridiculous lengths. And that sort of art of making a good, solid, impactful conclusion to a film, it seems as though there's this notion that the end of a film has got to be big in some way. Well, certainly for mainstream Hollywood films, I think.
Yeah, we were talking the other day, though, weren't we? Like, a lot of films that we've watched so far this year or at the end of last year seem to have, like, an inconclusive or ambiguous ending.
Yeah.
Especially...
Now, I don't think that's necessarily bad either, you know.
No, but it's they've not dragged it out.
No,
overdone it and...
Yeah. I mean, I think in a few weeks' time we'll mention the end, you know... I think the film with the greatest inconclusive ending is going to have a screening in Sheffield. The Thing.
John Carpenter's The Thing.
Now, that is the great... I think that's one of the greatest endings ever in a film, but... What? And that's what everybody thought when it first came out, and no one liked it.
But now... people go back to it.
But we seem to be used to having films that are running 2.5 to 3 hours as normal, and even when they're good, I can still see a lot of times in these films, you could have cut 5 or 10 minutes out of that.
On the other hand, playing devil's advocate, as I like to do, I'm pretty sure I've read something this time last year that was people want longer films.
Yeah.
People, when they go back to the cinema, want to see, they're out, they want to see something in the cinema that's worth going to see.
Yeah.
Give them a longer film. We asked 2,000 people and they wanted that.
Yeah.
So, and it seems churlish as a film fan to say, oh, God, was it more than 1.5 hours? Does it need to be that long? Like, you know, yeah. I want to enjoy good cinema and I don't mind if it's 2 or 3 hours, if it earns that 2 or 3 hours.
You know, we're getting into, like, there's like a confused area here, which is, well, you know, a film can be 90 minutes, 92 minutes. If it's a great movie, then wonderful. I've seen plenty of bad films that last 1.5 hours and you feel like your life is ebbing away from you.
Yeah.
Similarly, just because a film is 3 hours or 3.5 hours doesn't make it a good film, I don't think. You know, well, when you think in the 1960s, all of these big biblical epics, musicals, and I'm not having a go at you there when I say that.
I know, he's pointing at me, listener.
You know, routinely were 3 hours or so.
Mm.
But there was a big difference.
Yeah.
Intermissions.
Yes, long for an intermission in some films where you know it's going to be that long and you're actually put off going to, I don't want to bring it up again in a negative light and we will bring them up in a more positive light later, but another Scorsese thing is the mental block of going to see a film that you know is 3 hours long and you know you're not, you've got to tactically plan when you're going to go to the toilet or not drink anything before you go.
I mean, I was reading around a few articles about this, you know, from different perspectives on it. And there's some people with some weird ideas out there where someone's saying, well, what does it matter if you go to the loo in the middle of the film and you come back in, you'll catch up with what's happening. That's ludicrous.
Yeah.
You know, a major character could disappear from the film while you're out there.
We've got over the bad old days of you just go into the film whenever and then stay in until the bit that you were at. So you could join a film halfway, couldn't you?
Oh, yeah.
Back then.
I can remember those days.
I've just read it in books, Martin.
Very old books.
But that's a really weird notion, isn't it? Because I remember the publicity for Psycho was Hitchcock saying, you can't come in once it's started. Yeah. And that was a big deal.
Yeah,
I can't imagine going to see a film like that now. But
well,
straying from the topic. So.
No, but it's all about this, like the way we see things, isn't it? I mean, my dad used to take me to the pictures and he would never go in midway in a film.
Yeah.
He had to go in and see the film from the start, and that was it. Once it was over, then we went. But the thing about an intermission and where an intermission takes place is quite a skillful thing. Now, when I went to see Oppenheimer a few months ago, they put an intermission in.
Were they meant to?
No. So I'm not saying where I saw it.
No.
But it was perfect. It was the perfect moment for an intermission.
Yeah.
And I think an intermission should take place where more of the film has actually been shown and what there is still to see. And this was at the perfect moment in Oppenheimer. It was when he's on the phone to his wife and he says, bring in the sheets. And I'll say no more about it if you've seen the film, you know, the moment. And that was just so spot on. And people went out for 10 minutes.
Well, yeah.
And you know, come back.
Go to the loo. But did I tell you when I saw 2001 Space Odyssey the other week at the light, there was an intermission in it and no one knew what to do because they were like, wait.
So we
didn't know it was going to happen.
But
and someone turned around to the guy next to me and
went,
is this a break? What?
Well, I didn't like the ending
of that. You know, if you'd known the intermission was coming, that guy that went 5 minutes before would have waited.
Yeah.
Weird.
And I just think it's like going to the cinema shouldn't be an endurance test. It should be the case that you sit there in comfort and watch a film. And if it's gonna be over about 2.5 hours, I think all right, I can, you know, you have a wee before you go in and you don't bring a bucket
tactical,
of Coke.
Tactical toilet trips.
Yeah. But once you start getting over that, and I think some filmmakers are a bit precious about it. Scorsese was very precious about Killers of the Flower Moon.
Yeah, his editor was cross at people.
Give me a break, you know.
Literally give me a break.
I think one of the things they said was, well, when you go to the theatre, you're in there for 3.5 hours.
We give you a break.
You get, and sometimes you'd have two breaks, wouldn't you?
Yeah, and we take your money for gin.
Have you ever been to the theatre? Yes, exactly. The prices are terrible. So I didn't think that was an argument at all. One of the other things with the length of a movie, I mean, if you're trying to work out, will I be able to catch a train if I stay till the end of it?
Yeah.
It's like 10-minute end credit rolls now.
I know. I used to, and I know you did as well, I want to see the credits. I want to hear the music that they've chosen for those end credits.
Yeah.
I want to get to the end of the film. But so many times I'm in the cinema and I'm the last one left, the lights are up, and there's someone waiting to clear up after me, and I'm like, I haven't finished watching this film yet. But now it's like, it could be there for 10 minutes.
And I don't know, is it contractual now that everyone who's worked on a film has to have their name? It may well be, you know, that's just, well, if I've worked on the film, I need to have that. But especially with a special effects heavy film, there are
so
literally
many,
hundreds of names there. And
they'll have been toiling away at a desk for
eons. But then do you go to see who's the second compositor in the
compositor's other friend or
maybe. You tell your mum and dad to go, well, your name's on that. But it's weird, and it becomes one of those things where, of course, the other thing is there going to be a bit at the end of this?
Yeah, or in the middle of the beginning of the end.
And you have to blame Airplane for that.
Yeah, yeah.
That was one of the first times I saw that with a guy in the cab. I'll give him another 20 minutes. If I don't, I'm going.
Was it Wayne's World? No, there's quite a few where they do that. We finished, go away.
Yeah.
No, get out. Oh, it's Ferris Bueller.
Yes.
Yeah. What are you still doing here? I'm serious. Get out.
So in many ways, we've raised this topic just to fill time in today because we're not going to give you a conclusive answer to this.
Well, I haven't got a conclusive answer. But if you're a fan of seeking out 90 minutes or less, there is a podcast. There is always a podcast. But it's like a 90 minutes or less film fest.
Oh, right.
And it's a chap called, what's his name? Sam Clements. And he'll get it's like he's curating a fictional film festival.
Yeah.
And so he'll get guests on to suggest a film. And the only rule is it's got to be under 90 minutes. I wonder if he'd let us have 92. The ideal length, according to this survey.
Yeah, I think you have a little bit of leeway there. But I would say some of the greatest films ever made have been 90 minutes.
Mm.
So you pick your film and you take your choice.
Yep,
but always go to the loo before you go in to see any film, no matter how long it is.
Yeah.
Are you ready for our next piece of music?
I don't know. I've only just recovered from the last one. What have we got now?
Blind Lemon Shatner is...
gone already.
As...
Turn my mic down.
This one's... You'll know this one. This isn't an old blues number. It's him working out on that great Canned Heat number. Let's Work Together.
Together we stand, divided we fall. Come on now, people, let's get on the ball and work together. Come on, come on, let's work together. No, 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 people, 'cause together we will stand, every boy, every girl, and a man. Before when things go wrong, as they sometimes will, and the road you've traveled, it stays all uphill. Let's work together. Come on, come on, let's work together. You know, together we will stand, every boy, girl, woman, and a man. Oh, now 2 or 3 minutes, 2 or 3 hours, what does it mean?
together we will stand, every boy, every woman, and a man. Someone smile. Let's all work together. Make life worthwhile. Let's work together. Come on, come on. Let's work together. Now, 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 people, come together. We will stand. Every boy, girl, woman, and a man. Now, come on. Let's work together. Let's make someone happy. Make someone smile. Let's work together, make life worthwhile. Let's work together, come on, come on. Let's work together now, now people, 'cause the planet needs us. Red or blue, it don't matter, it don't matter, it don't matter. 'Cause together we will stand, every boy, girl, woman, and a man.
You're listening to Denise and Martin on the Film Show on Sheffield Live 93.2 FM. We are also available to download from the website, Sheffield Live website, and on digital in the South Yorkshire area.
I'm sure you'll be wanting to revisit some of the tracks we've played today on the show. And remember, there's still two more to come.
I didn't get hysterical during that one.
No.
So, yeah.
I think you're starting to acclimatise yourself.
Oh, dear.
You're warming to him.
Oh, dear. When we can acclimatise to... William Shatner's. I mean, let's work together on this, Martin.
Yes.
Yeah. Let's work together on some reviews for this week.
I think we should.
Yeah. I didn't get out much this week for busy working.
That's
reasons.
Unusual for you. I mean, you're never in.
Yeah. I wasn't in much, but no. I did catch a new Amazon Prime. Now, I just got to put this into context. I do yearn for a good rom-com. I love... My favourite type of films are screwball comedies from that golden era, 30s, maybe 40s comedies as well. And the idea of You is a new Amazon Prime. It has got limited release at cinemas as well. It sort of billed as a rom-com. I found it more rom than com.
Mm-hmm.
There are funny moments in it. It's Anne Hathaway playing a 40-year-old single mum to a teenage girl who, importantly, has been, you know... put to the on the shelf by her husband, who's left her for a younger woman before the film starts. And she has a meet cute with Nichols Galitzine.
Is that meet spelled M-E-A-T?
No.
Okay, sorry.
It's just the meet cute moment. She has a meet cute with much younger, so she is, shocker, 40, and he is 25.
40 is the new 21, darling.
But, well, she's also Anne Hathaway, 40, which isn't even... She looks shy of 30, frankly. She's flipping gorgeous, isn't she?
Arsenal supporter as well.
But she meets this... Now, for their meet-cute moment, it's in a trailer going to the toilet and a toilet misunderstanding. So a film that can come make, you know, some kind of romantic love out of that is doing all right. As far as I'm concerned... If who this film is for is people like me, or people like maybe they were fans of Princess Diaries, Anne Hathaway when she was younger, and people who want to look at a very gorgeous young man, Nichols Galitzine, who plays Hayes, the boy band singer. Well, he's also known for a rather poor but trashy film called Red, White and Royal Blue, where he plays like an imagined version of the royal family, where he plays a prince who falls in love with the first son of the American US president. It's very bad, but it's so bad that you can't stop watching
it. I think
it.
I know a lot of crap facts, but you...
Down a rabbit hole.
You're down a whole different rabbit hole to the one I go down.
But he was...
But there's so much in there, isn't
there? Yeah, he was also in Bottoms, which I don't know if you saw that. It was last year. It's directed by the director of Shiva Baby. Do you remember
Shiva Baby was great,
Emma Seligman.
Yeah.
And that is a rather bonkers high school thing where he plays a bit of a high school jock in it. That is quite funny. It's a bit mad. It's not a perfect film, but it is. I think he's one film away from quite a good role.
Oblivion.
And there's a lot of sexy moments in this film. He's pretty gorgeous. He looks at her gorgeously. And it is.
She looks back at him gorgeously.
Yeah, and rather sexily. There's sexily romping, but not like it's 15 rated. It's not, you know. But it is. I enjoyed it. It's not for cynics. And who this film is not for, Martin, it's not for you.
I think that's a little prescriptive.
I don't think you'd enjoy it at all.
Are you going to get a TV guide every week now and just ink out things that are not for me?
Sometimes, some of us, we, on a Sunday afternoon, might watch a Channel 5 film, just find ourselves in front of the telly.
I've done that.
And it's like a romantic comedy or a romantic drama. It's more drama than comedy, but it's light drama. And I liked it, and I'm going to rate it, and I don't care.
I'm just going to get back into the box you've categorised me, you know, and not come out for a while.
It's not high art. It's not for cynics.
Okay.
And I am a cynic in some ways, but I still enjoyed this film.
Yes, yes. You were about William Shatner, and now listen to you. Right, well, I went to see a film which, according to Denise, I won't like. I shouldn't like, because I'm a man. And this is a lesbian neo-noir.
I'm not saying you don't like things just because they're women. I just know that you would trash this. I know that you're not going to trash this. But
can I get on with my review?
No, defending my review. Carry on now.
I wasn't having to go at your review. I was having to go at the review of me that you were doing. I went to see Love Lies Bleeding. This, as I say, a LGBTQ plus neo-noir with Katie Stewart, Kristen Stewart and Katie O'Brien as two lovelorn sort of people on the criminal side of things. Katie O'Brien plays a female bodybuilder and Kristen Stewart runs a gym. So, obviously, the meet cute thing is in the gym. And it follows a series of misadventures which gets them involved in all sorts of grisly murders. Much of that concerning the truly amazing Ed Harris in this film.
Yeah, he looks quite
sinister. He looks like death warmed up, and he is terrifying in it. And for the most part, I absolutely loved this film. It was complete gangbusters. It was sexy. It was incredibly violent. I don't think you're going to like it because it's set in a dusty, sunny environment. And I know what you like about it.
Are there some nightclubs and pubs and bars in there?
There's lots
of. I might be all right if we get into a bar occasionally.
Lots of stuff in bars. Performances were amazing, photography was amazing. And then in the last 15 minutes or so, it fell apart.
Oh, really?
For me, yeah.
Oh.
It turned into Attack of the 50-Foot Woman, and I just didn't go with it. And the film's directed by Rose Glass, who made St. Maud.
Yeah.
Probably longer ago than what I remember, because it might have been before
COVID.
It was
pre-pandemic,
yeah.
Oh, and, that was like ages ago, then.
And again, I loved that up until the end, where it just... I don't know. I don't need this sort of, you know, all strings tied up. It's all nice and neat. But I just didn't go with what they gave me at the end of Love Lies Bleeding. And then it sort of goes back in the final shot to what I hoped it would be.
Right. Oh, that sounds intriguing. I'm still going to check that out then.
I'd say go and see it, because you may well enjoy
the lesbian rompiness of it.
There's loads of lesbian. It wasn't a lesbian romping I didn't enjoy. although it was all very tastefully done.
And the violence sounds
And
fun.
I did notice the intimacy coordinators were on the credits for this as well.
They're on all the time, aren't they? Which I think is a good thing.
Yes.
A good thing.
Or we get back to Harvey Weinstein.
So
I'm going to give it a qualified rate because it frustrated me more than anything else because it was just such a I say, all guns blazing, literally, great thriller going on. And they just sort of chuck this stuff in at the end. I didn't need it, let's say. I'm not sure many other people in the cinema did either. I have nothing else to say on the matter.
Okay, well, I did get to see something this week. And I went out, it was my birthday, so I took the day off. And I went to see the film that you reviewed last week, Kidnapped,
and
Italian
was
film.
Was I right with my
I
rate?
Loved it, yeah. But it's, funnily enough, I went to see another Italian film after called There's Still Tomorrow, which is director Paola Cortellesi, who also stars in the film as the lead actor. She plays a housewife with an abusive husband. It's post-war Italy. It's sort of in a neo-realism sort of... It's been described as that, but really it's more in appearance than substance.
Yeah.
It's very...
I mean, sometimes it becomes one of those sort of lazy phrases that people... Well, it's Italian and it's in black and white, so it's got to be neo-realism.
But this was a massive, massive hit in Italy, in its home country, last year. It outperformed at the box office Barbie and Oppenheimer, and it was just huge. It's got quite a light touch. So for a film, when you say it deals with an abusive marriage, I mean, the first shot in the film, basically, she wakes up, he wakes up next to her, she says good morning, he slaps her in the face. And then it goes into a jaunty song. And there's early on, there's a scene where you might find like abusive scenes like this quite triggering and upsetting.
Yeah.
And the way they manage it is the first time you can see that this is coming, it turns into a dance sequence.
And that's interesting, isn't it? Yeah.
So this is like a pattern of behaviour.
Yeah.
But it's much... It's I wouldn't say easier to watch, but it's kind of like, oh, I see where you're going with this. You're taking me on this journey with this woman, but it is not, oh, woe is me. And it's kind of... Well, my other half, when he came out and after seeing it, said it was like about power, courage and hope. And it turns into, because she's basically finding a way out of this situation. And it's sort of about female solidarity and a daughter, relationship with her daughter, and a daughter coming to respect her and understand her and how they do that. It's just, I found it gorgeous. It looks gorgeous. It feels gorgeous.
Well, you showed me the trailer before we come in. And yeah, it looks, without it being sort of beautiful from what the locations are, the way it's shot and the cinematography just looks great. It looks really, really stunning.
Unfortunately, it's got quite a limited... I saw it at the Cineworld. It's got quite a limited release, but it is on the light at the end of the month, on Monday the 20th of May, one night only. Don't know what I was saying. Sorry, world. But it's also on at View Cinemas this week, Monday and Wednesday.
Oh, is it? Right.
Otherwise, it'll probably be on streaming. But I would recommend seeing it on a big screen.
Well, it sounds like one to catch.
Yeah. I rate it.
Yeah. Would you like to introduce the next musical track?
Oh, well, I'm going to leave that to you, Martin.
I made the offer.
I mean, I could, but... I don't know what I'd tell you about it apart from it's William Shatner. I put a spell on you.
Doing the great Screaming Jay Hawkins number. I put a spell on you. I put a spell on you. You're mine, you're mine. You better stop the things you do. I ain't lying. No, I ain't lying. Stand it. The way you always put me down. I put a spell on you, 'cause you're mine, 'cause you're mine,
You better stop the things you do. I ain't lying. No, I ain't lying. I love you. And I don't care if you don't love me. And I love you. I'm yours. I'm yours. I put a spell on you 'cause you're mine. A spell on you because you're mine. Cause you're mine.
Just to think that man has been into space. You're listening to the film show on Sheffield Live.
Are you still
Live.
Listening?
It's just probably just our close relatives that are still listening. 93.2 FM and on digital, and you can listen online via the Sheffield Live show. And I know phone lines are lit up. People are ringing in asking. They just want confirmation that we're going to play the William Shatner Christmas album at Christmas. People have said their Christmases have been ruined over the past 4 years, that we haven't played a selection from Shatner Claus. Well, I can guarantee you that our final show before Christmas will have Bill's selection of Christmas songs, which will warm the cockles of your hearts.
I'm going to China for Christmas.
Oh, ye of little face.
Love him, love him, love him, love him.
Yes.
Yeah.
A quick whiz around stuff you can catch.
What's a coming?
Yeah. There's The Light is putting on a season of Kubrick films throughout May and June. So you'd have to check the website for the actual dates. Now, they're showing Doctor Strangelove, Clockwork Orange, The Shining, the extended version of The Shining, Full Metal Jacket.
Love that.
And we played a selection of music from Full Metal Jacket a few years back.
Good.
And it's finishing with, as you would expect, 2001 Space Odyssey. So, if you're into Kubrick, or if you've never seen these films on the big screen, I'd recommend you go along and educate yourself.
Yeah. Also, talking of seasons, there is a Danny Boyle showing of Shallow Grave at the Light on this Friday the 10th. It's the 30th anniversary. One of my faves. That's his first feature film, I think. He'd done a lot of telly before then, I think.
Yeah.
That was his first feature film with Ewan McGregor, Chris Eccleston, Kerry Fox. Lovely, funny film.
Do you know when Trainspotting first came out?
I thought it was a test then. I was like, 1996.
Him, was it John McDonald was the producer? Or?
Yeah.
And the writer was?
Mr. Alex Garland. Was that not for, oh no, was that 28 Days Later?
That was 28 Days. But anyway, the three of them were in the showroom.
Mm.
And I did a Q&A for Trainspotting a few weeks before it came out.
Yeah.
And we were in like cinema.
Not two
three
or,
four.
Oh, right.
I don't think they were open yet.
Ah.
And it was you
that
think,
long ago.
Yeah. But you think to have like them three in the same room. And I still don't think it was full either.
And they would have heard of them then.
And there was one guy who got really vexed who'd read Trainspotting and the film didn't end how he thought it should have.
Yeah.
And I think
it's a film.
And I think Danny Boyle said, well, you know, you can make your version then.
Yeah.
Good
answer.
Yes, so anyway.
Screenplay was by Danny Boyle and John Hodge.
John Hodge, that was the name, yeah.
What else is coming up? Big release, Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. I'm not one for that franchise, but you may be.
I might go and say, I think out of a sense of duty. I don't know what the next title might be. Is it like Sandwich of the Planet of the Apes? Where'd they go from here? I don't know.
Or, City Plaza of the apes. I don't know. I am looking forward to, this could be brilliant, it could be genius, it could be a car crash. La Chimera, the Alice, now do you say her name Rohrwacher? Maybe. I'll just say it quickly and confidently. So, Alice Rohrwacher. So Josh O'Connor, who plays a Tuscan British archaeologist who's sort of on the raid for artifacts. I've heard amazingly interesting things about this film. But also it made me think Josh O'Connor, he was in Challenges that I gave not a great review for last week. And it was because of a lack of chemistry. And I think I've been thinking about this a lot. And I think if you're going to play a young version of Prince Charles, how long is it until you can be considered sexy in a film?
Mm.
And I think that might be where I've lost the sexy edge.
You think
that
those bad memories of him being Prince Charles have...
He did a very good job, you see. It was in The Crown. I don't think you watched that.
I'm sorry, I seem to have missed that.
Yeah, I'm afraid he was too good. Maybe he was just too good that I can't see him as a sexy lead.
How can anybody be too good for The Crown? How can anybody be too good for The Crown?
Well, no, him and... I can't remember her name now. The
Olivia Colman?
Co-star. No. No, the one that played Diana. Oh, her name escapes me now, but they were very good together in it.
Right.
Even though it was The Crown. It's not made... It's not for you, that, Martin. It's not for you. I'm wondering if I'm going to...
naughty child who's sent out of the room.
It's not for you.
Get him out. It's not for him.
But this looks quite intriguing. So I'm going to give that watch. That's on the Curzon from Friday.
Okay.
And I've still got to watch The Fall Guy, which I'm going to see tomorrow, which I already love. So expect a fully biased review next week.
I can't wait for that.
I've been listening to Drive all week, the soundtrack from that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've had a Ryan Gosling week.
It's. I mean, that's a good soundtrack.
It's a fantastic soundtrack. I remember it more than the film.
Yeah, I just think the film's lost something for me. And I think I've said this before. I'm not going to say it again. But then maybe Drive isn't a film for you, Denise.
It's not for you, Denise.
Not for you, Denise. Leave the room, please.
Get back to Channel 5 on a Sunday. Off you go.
Yeah, some of those nice rom-coms. It's more rom than com.
Yeah, it was more rom than com. I like a com and a rom. Yeah.
Listen, we've got people baying for the final track.
I know. They're banging on the windows.
Yes. Stop. Stop. Don't play no more. So we're going to go out with Bill doing a version of the Muddy Waters classic, Manish Boy. We'll be back next week.
Oh, we will.
Unless we're taken off air due to this week's playlist. Have a good week. Watch great movies and... read a Paul Auster book.
Yeah.
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 Bye-bye.
Bye.
Now, when I was a young boy in Montreal, the age of 5, my mother said I was going to be the greatest man alive. And now I'm a man way past 21. Want you to believe me, baby. Spell M-A-N, child. I'm a man. Ain't that a man? I spell M-A-N, child. M, that represents man. No, B-O, child. Y, that means manish boy. Outside, just me and my mate. You know I make the moon, honey, come up 2 hours late. Wasn't that a man? You betcha that's a man.